Henry Reinga with Steve Elzinga. We're back for another conversation about influence-wrecking habits. And you can't believe there's this many influence-wrecking habits. And that a walk with God has something to say that fuels a influential person.
Right. So I berated all of you last session about whether you had a walk with God. And
right.
Have you acquired a walk with God since that session?
I didn't think you were berating them. You were challenging them.
Okay. It's not, you know, when you don't accept the challenge, it sounds like berating.
I gotcha. I think that's a good challenge.
Yes.
Well, so if the shoe fits, wear it, and let's keep going.
Okay.
So, losing moderation in your lifestyle, Proverbs 20, verse 1, wine is a mocker and beer a brawler. Whoever is led astray by them is not wise. Proverbs 25, verse 27, it is not good to eat too much honey.
So, I think the rest of that is, or you will vomit.
Yeah, I know. We only had so much room on the slide.
Right, right.
So losing moderation, I think our culture, many parts of the world, the culture has lost moderation anyway. We have places where new marijuana rules are, where marijuana is legal in many states. Alcohol is, you know, out there. I know that Jesus created water into wine, so the issue is not necessarily, but there's alcoholics, they should never even be be around alcohol. I mean, there's a lot of issues of moderation. There's eating too much. There's obesity, severe obesity, not related to genetic issues, but just related to I can eat whatever I want.
Right.
So, and again, it's almost to the point where even saying stuff about the lack of moderation is often considered as hate speech, even a form of it. But the truth is that moderation is important for influence.
Right. Another word that you might use is balance, that you want to have a balanced life, so you can not have moderation of your life if you're working all the time.
Right.
Or you're spending all your time at church and doing ministry and ignoring your spouse or your family.
Right.
That's not, you know, work in moderation.
Right.
Do everything in moderation. Or in other words, have a good balance with everything that you do. Don't, you know, go into one thing to the neglect of the other. We said something about that in, you know, that last session about triage, that if you spend way too much time on this,
right,
and you make it perfect, which is good.
Right.
On the other hand, you're losing all these things that you didn't do anything with.
In some ways, this is one where a coach could be really helpful.
Right. Because people don't always see where their life is out of balance.
Right.
They're just unhappy, and everyone around them is unhappy.
Right.
So then a coach can say, all right, let's look at your life. Where are things kind of pinching? Where's the pressure?
Right.
Where you're feeling anxious, and then people put it out on the table, and then it's like, you know, soon you can see, yeah, I'm burning the candle on both ends. I'm,
right,
you know, I'm heavily into that. Then I ignore that. Then I get behind on that. Then I work on that. And then I get behind on the other thing.
Right.
Yeah.
And I think that ministers, when you know, especially the career ministers, who this is your work, keeping that balance, because often many of you don't have to be at a certain place. Like in some ways, in terms of self-pace, when you punch in and punch out or you go there, many people in ministry, if you're retired and you're doing ministry as a volunteer now, all of a sudden you're injected that you internally must be balanced.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And how to get there, there's a life coach opportunity.
Right.
Not caring about your dress or appearance. Proverbs 15, verse 30, a cheerful look brings joy to the heart, and good news gives health to the bones. Now, in this sense, it's like a cheerful look by the person. But I picked that verse because I just sort of looked at the word look. Right. I could not honestly find a proverb, Steve. I'm just going to be...
It's close. It's got the word look in it.
Yeah, yeah.
And cheerful.
It does.
All right.
So I'm going with it. With disclosure that I could not find... Now, if you can find one, email it to me, you know. Mm. But the idea... this is something that influence literature talks about, like... that many people discount how important appearance is on many levels too.
Right. Well, you know, if you don't look put together, it's like, you know, people conclude maybe your life isn't together, and if you're sloppy about that, then are you sloppy with other things? And so, should I follow you? Should I believe what you say?
It feels superficial to me. I know I've heard one person say, look, how I look is how I look. If they're going to judge me for how I'm going to look, what does it matter? That's on them. You know, I heard that a few more than
once. But people, you know, we have, you know, when you're speaking and you're trying to influence me, I make judgments about whether I should listen to you based on what. I mean, I have to go with what I have.
Your first impression.
And what I have is what you're saying and what you look like, and I put all those things together.
So, in terms of influencing for Christ and ministry and all that, how important is first impressions and look, and you know, because we talk about all these deep things, they feel deep, and this feels so on the surface.
And appearance has many facets to it. For example, my church is very informal. We have a lot of new people that come in, so I dress informally. So it's not like, you know, that when you're concerned with your appearance, that doesn't mean you're necessarily wearing a suit. You're trying to wear what is appropriate for the situation. You don't want what you're wearing to be the distraction.
I see. So you don't look at me and I have a suit. Yeah. None of you have a suit, but I have a suit. And I'm trying to tell you all, you're coming to the Lord's house and you should have a suit.
Yeah. I'm better than you. Or,
I
see. You know,
but you could actually overcook it then, overdo it.
Yeah. So it's just caring about your dress and appearance and being appropriate to the situation.
Gotcha. Now, there is, in different cultures, modesty laws, modesty rules, modesty customs. And we've traveled the world, and we're fascinated that in one place in the world, this amount of clothing on is modest, and this other part of the world is
more respectful. Like in the Philippines, it's really, really hot, but people wear long pants. And if you're going to a function and you show up in shorts... You know, they may excuse it because you're a white person, you're a missionary or something, but they feel dishonored. So you have to know those customs that you have to put a pair of pants on even though it's 95 degrees out because it honors them.
Right. So dress from a appropriate perspective is important even in your mission.
Right.
And where you are...
Who you're trying to reach. You know, if you're trying to reach guys that are working in warehouses, then, you know, what will relate to them?
Right.
Paul says, I've become all things to all people by all possible means to reach them.
Right. So actually, there's a good passage that doesn't have a cheerful look.
Right.
But if you apply the Apostle Paul there, he is thinking,
where
how
is appropriate for what you're trying to do? Don't let that be a distraction.
Right.
Let it be an asset instead of a distraction.
I think sometimes Christians, you see it in social media too, where since social media is a global platform, people judge each other not by their unique place. Mm-hmm. It's your own place. And you see a Christian looking like this to you, all of a sudden you go off on them because you can't believe that somebody would not be like you and be a Christian.
Right.
Right. One more thing on this one before I go. So a life coach. So someone comes to talk with you about dress and appearance. In some ways, if that would feel a little bit like strange. Like, what are they going to do? Go shopping with you or help you decide who's going to go shopping with you? I mean,
well,
this could be so nuts and bolts.
You can tell people a bunch of stuff. Or you can help them discover it.
I see.
And again, in the coaching thing, it's always good to help them discover it. Okay, where are you feeling kind of out of place with your dress? Well, I go here and this, you know, that if you just help them talk about it, they're going to figure out, now does anyone else at your church wear a tie? No. So how do you feel about that? Maybe I shouldn't wear a tie. You know, I don't have to tell you not to wear a tie.
Right.
I just have to get you to start talking about these awkward situations. Or where do you feel uncomfortable? Or
right.
Well, I feel uncomfortable because I was taught that this is the Lord's house. And, okay, is there another way of thinking about this?
Right.
I don't know. This is the way I've always thought. Well, come up with three different ways of thinking about this.
Right.
Well, I guess I don't. I guess I'm not dissing my friends when I show up with my jeans. God sees me in my underwear and he still loves me. I don't have
right.
to impress him. You know, whatever. There's right. other things to think of here.
Right.
So just helping them think. Again, you could tell them, look, wear this, do that. But then right. when you're not there, they're lost again.
Right.
They got to help. They got to get to a thought about this. What?
Right.
Why is this important? You know, what can you do about it?
Here's one that's sort of in the literature, and I had a hard time finding a Bible passage on this one, too.
Crafty man.
Being sly or creepy. Proverbs 14, verse 17. I sort of saw a crafty man as hated. Again, I'm just putting all these together just in a sure. bunch just to
sure.
be...
Sure.
But I get what the influence literature talks about when it comes to be creepy.
Hmm.
How do you understand creepy?
I don't know. Creepy is
someone that is, you know, there's some kind of a hidden agenda here and I don't trust you. So it could be how you're dressed. It could be what you're saying or not saying. There's something about you that I don't trust.
Something like...
You know, maybe you make some inappropriate jokes or you're overly friendly to
you stare
the female staff or something. There's
yeah,
some
yeah.
weird, creepy thing. Or, you know, you're always touching the opposite sex and giving them hugs. And
yeah,
it's a little
yeah.
bit like... You know, it's fine giving a hug, but, you know, some people when they're excessive or they go out of their way and it's like, okay, hold it. What's going on here? So I think it's these little hidden, inappropriate things.
Right.
Just a little borderline inappropriate. Inappropriate
right.
dress.
Right.
You know, why are you dressing like that?
Right.
What are you trying to do here?
Right. Or where you call attention to yourself in a way that doesn't seem normal,
right?
To use
right.
that type of
language. Or you know, people you know that you're working with, and they want to talk about, let's say, your sex life or something with your spouse, and it's
right.
like, hold it, you know, what has this got to do with
that's
anything?
Being
and
creepy.
Why are you asking me this? That there's some other
right.
agenda I don't know about.
Yeah,
hiding, you know.
Right. So sometimes people are creepy about one thing or two things. They're not generally creepy, but if they talk about this, they're creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think everybody is creepy about something, or do you think that some people really have the creepy monitor pretty well? I mean, is this something that everybody should have a conversation with a trusted friend? Hey, do I have any areas in my life where I'm creepy about?
Hey, maybe.
You just wonder about that to do a reality check because...
Right.
I might not think something's creepy,
right.
but because I saw my whole childhood growing up,
right.
and it didn't feel creepy, but right. it just, you know, I think there's sort of like manipulative creepy, but there's also people
yeah.
were raised a certain way,
right.
and they're not thinking this is creepy at all. It's normal for me.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, probably a good way is to ask somebody: is there any aspect of where I'm kind of seems inappropriate to you, or
right?
Like I have some other agenda. Or yeah, you know, it's when you do this.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. But now, that would be, for many, very difficult to, like, want to look at a self-aware way. You get defensive on that quickly, probably. You could. Because
you could.
It's like, if it's something that you do and you do...
You could. But I think if you're in charge of asking, that's kind of a general rule. If you wait for someone to criticize you, then you get defensive.
Ah.
If you ask them, hey, do you have any advice to give me? I'm in charge.
Right.
And so I don't feel bad when you start giving me advice because I asked it from you.
Right.
But when you give it without me asking it, then you are poking me and you want to poke me.
Yes.
So when I asked for it, you didn't even want anything. I'm coming to you.
Right.
So
that's very interesting. Next one. Using social media as your bully pulpit. Proverbs 6, verse 27. Can a man scoop fire into his lap without his clothes being burned?
Okay, so what's a bully platform?
Well, you have a political position, and you really believe strongly in it, and you use social media, and you post articles about your position, and then maybe you put in the line something like, you know, the opposite party has now forgot this, and, you know, you're, or let's say, you believe a certain social issue a certain way, and then it's like anytime someone goes to your social media feed, they see that this is your thing and it's always your thing, and you feel you become a very thin in who you are to the world because this is who you are, and you want everyone to know it.
And I think the term itself, bully. I think it was bully pulpit. When you're standing behind a pulpit, you have authority that people have given to you as the pastor. And you can speak to your congregation for as long as you want, right? Because you have the pulpit.
Right.
And they're stuck just sitting there listening.
So
you have an advantage that others don't have. In a conversation, I'm talking to you, you can interrupt me, you can say,
right,
I disagree.
Right.
But when I'm behind the pulpit, I have an authority that sort of squelches you.
Right.
So it's people taking advantage of their position or something.
Or a platform to
hammer their position without anyone having a chance to really discuss it. So I think in social media, you can just say all that you want, And it's very difficult for people to, you know, to have a conversation with you about that. You can slant everything your way.
Right.
And, you know, make the other person look silly and stupid that you wouldn't be able to do maybe in another situation.
It's interesting. A lot of the companies have now laws and guidelines. Right. This whole discussion of fake news and everything, you know, part of it is related to the influencing, wrecking habits that a lot of people who believe strongly about something keep pushing the envelope, and then it becomes like spamming.
Yeah.
People feel that this is spam, and then they complain about it.
Right.
Now, what you can get caught up on is, well, my issue is just, and I want everybody. But notice the violation of influence there, or how it's an influencing your working habit. The fact that people complain itself says that anyone who gets a bully puppet type of stuff, they feel like, I don't want to be around that person, so they complain to Facebook or to, you know, another social media company about it. The trait tells you that people don't like that.
I think too, like in social media, there's a lot of speakers on social media, YouTube and so on. You can listen to really smart people say stuff, and when you listen to someone talk about, for example, global warming, for example, and they'll have 10 really great things that you can't say anything against for it,
right.
Or someone else listens to other guys who are against it.
Yes.
And they can arrange all the information exactly just so that when you, a person who doesn't know much about it, you hear it, it's like, wow, that's it. And so now you go down that trail and you believe this and you're telling all your friends this is the truth, when you don't know whether it's the truth or not. And then someone else shows you the other side.
It's a truth.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Where did you get it?
It's not true.
I listen to a lot of people, and this is what everyone's saying.
Or not saying,
Until they hear someone else give 10 reasons on the other side.
Right.
And now they're flipping and flopping, and it's just hard these days with social media because everyone's using it as a platform to slant everything. Rarely does someone go, let me tell you the 10 things for this and the 10 things against this right. and let you think about it. No.
Right. No, it's one.
You're an idiot if you don't think exactly the way right. I think.
And ultimately, having a, whether you preach on Sunday this way, even preaching, there's a humility by which you right. don't.
Yeah, yeah. Some things in the Bible are like, you know what? I don't know. This is my, you know, I'm looking at, I'm listening and reading the commentaries, and there's smart people who think opposite on this.
Yes, one. Right.
So I don't have all the answers, folks. Right. Where some people think that, hey, somebody's got to be this way.
Using humor that disrespects people, Proverbs 4, verse 24, put away perversity from your mouth, keep corrupt talk far from your lips. Why is humor something that can hurt your influence?
Mm-hmm. Well, humor is, I'll watch people talking, on the street or in a mall or wherever, and within a minute, someone's laughing.
Right.
So humor is the oil of the grease.
Yeah.
Making relationships happen. And not all of us are humorists or comedians. We don't. And so a lot of us rely on put-down humor.
Right.
Or
sarcastic humor.
Yeah, negative stuff. Because negative stuff can be funny. I was in the Philippines, for a year long ago. And if someone got hurt, everyone started laughing. It was just sort of a...
Actually,
it was
always before funny. I visited the Philippines,
funny. That was part of that culture.
Right.
That when something happens, it's funny. So, but a lot of times we can use humor to hurt people. We're trying... It's that passive-aggressive thing. I'm trying to say this to you. And instead of being direct, I'm going to be humorous about it. Well, it's about time you showed up.
Right.
When really I want to say, how come you're so stinking late? Every time we have to wait for you. But I don't want to do that.
Right.
So I make some comment. Well, I'm glad you finally showed up.
Yeah, I'm glad you graced us with your presence
today. Yeah, thank you.
Well, and I think, too, let's talk about hate speech. It's in the news all the time. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about, abuse speech. What is that? Mm-hmm. It's hard to get a grasp of... I mean, it's even in laws now in the USA and other places in the world that if you say something hateful, even joking about whether it's racial or whether it's a gender or a same sex or gay, lesbian, there's so many of these areas now that are actually considered hate speech.
Right.
And we Christians... the worldview of one man, one woman marriage, and even at Christian Leaders Institute, we invite anyone to study here.
Right.
Okay, so now we're talking about people that have some different worldviews on some strongly believed things.
Right.
And then there's sort of like this humor can be a place where little things are said that ultimately disrespect people.
Right. Yeah. Someone's doing something. What's the matter? Are you gay? And we just mean that as a put down when the person isn't gay at all, but we use it as a negative term to slam somebody.
Right.
And, because they picked a flower or something. And, are you gay now? Or, it's sort of inappropriate.
And as you're saying that, you're wondering, is that somehow inappropriate?
Yeah.
Okay. So, I mean.
Well, that's the other side. The other side is, where hate speech. Is something, of course, that it never goes well. Hate does not work,
right?
But sometimes people interpret people just analyzing something as hate speech.
Right.
If I want to talk about my beliefs about lesbians and gays and transgender and all that, and I am arguing and making points about something, biology, or I'm trying to make some kind of an argument, and I'm making it for a particular side, and then you don't like my side, and now you call that hate speech.
Right.
I'm just arguing a point.
Right.
I'm not calling anybody anything.
Right.
So that, you know, people can go the other side and declare everything. If you disagree with me, it's hate speech.
Right. Right.
No, it's just, no, it can be. If I'm using, I'm derogatory, I'm not very respectful about people that I'm talking about. But I can talk about differences and opinions without being disrespectful for a person. And I'm talking to a Christian. I believe a totally different thing that they do. But I can be respectful of them. I don't hate them.
Right.
And I'm not going to belittle them.
Right.
I want them to come to know the faith. So right. I'm being positive and, you know, gentle and, you know.
Right. But if I hear you say that, I, you know, some might be saying, well, you sound a little defensive about just telling your perspective versus the other. I bring this up because that's the world we're in right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We're in a place where if someone has a different worldview from me, we can, because of many times social media, because that you have that one-sided platform that we talked about the last time. And being influential is knowing that that is the world we live in.
Right.
And we can fight it.
Right.
Or we can say, look, how do I love my neighbor even when it hurts? How do I get up on what is considered hate speech?
Right.
And I think this issue will come back for Christians in surprising ways. If we can be the leaders of respect and kindness,
right.
Even with people with an opposite worldview from some of our perspectives, we would be more influential.
Right.
But if we like take the bait,
right.
As Brian DeCook talks about in the Peace Fire class and peace, if we often react right. and then go back and say, you know, you who don't have our worldview,
yeah.
you know, you can't possibly know God, and you know,
right.
again, in the very demeaning ways.
Right. It's disrespectful speech, you know, maybe is, you know,
a lot of people
aren't going to admit that they're doing hate speech, but if you just change the word, are you respectful when you're talking about
right.
people that you disagree with?
Right.
Or are you like even in church, in little ways, you know, Lord, we pray for all those that are out there in darkness. What are you saying? You're saying all of us are sitting here in the light and all of those people out there are just
exactly.
wallowing in the darkness. Aren't we great and aren't they poor?
Right.
It's disrespectful of people who need a Savior just like you need a Savior.
Right, right.
More respectful would be, you know, we pray for people that are living in darkness as we sometimes struggle with that too.
Right.
I need a Savior too. I'm
right.
being respectful of you. I'm saying you need the same thing that I need.
Right.
I'm not above you.
You know, this whole discussion, as the world gets more fragmented and in different cultures come together, in a lot of ways, to learn how to have appropriate humor,
mm-hmm.
to learn how to respect other people. People of very different opinions than you. And you know what I feel, Steve, frustrated too, is that in many ways, the walls that come up over superficial things separate real opportunity of love and relationship.
Right.
So like the thin, like a comment that's taken this way,
mm-hmm.
it's like the evil one just makes the chasm bigger
right.
when it was something superficial. It wasn't in the heart
right.
of both sides
right.
on
right.
a specific issue.
Right.
Well, we'll leave that one, and that sort of relates to stirring dissension then.
Yeah.
Proverbs 6, verse 14b and 15, he always stirs up dissension, therefore disaster will overtake him. In an instant, he will suddenly be destroyed without remedy. A hot-tempered man stirs up dissension, but a patient man calms a quarrel. A greedy person, or greedy man stirs up dissension.
Yeah.
What is dissension?
Dissension. It's a dissent. It's got to be negative,
right?
You're stirring up negative.
It's that thing that words connect together.
Yeah, you're stirring up people, getting people against one another.
you're encouraging argument. I always say to leaders, especially, you walk around with two cans, and one has gas in it, and one has water.
Wow.
And now you run into some situation. What are you going to pour on here? The gas? Or are you going to put the water on this dissension? And a lot of us put the gas on. We hear it.
Right.
We say something that just makes it go even worse.
Right.
And now we got this huge fire.
Right.
Instead of, you know, our pastor did this, and he said that in his last sermon. I know, he did, and I just add to it.
Right.
And now we're both over on fire against this guy, instead of saying, maybe he wasn't the best last, but, the week before he said this, I just put a little water on it.
Right.
Or Jesus, with the woman caught in adultery. Okay, those of you without sin, why don't you throw the first stone? He threw water on the whole situation, and they all walked away.
Right. I find that sometimes there, in my ministry over the last 40 years, I've seen lives destroyed spiritually by a descent of spirit.
Right.
I almost left ministry. Young in the ministry, just knew. I thought everything was going good, and this one man, nice as ever, nice to me. Mm-hmm. And then, but he was superficially nice to everybody. But what he was doing was
behind the scenes. Oh, he was stirring things up.
Yes.
So, and a lot of times, some of the nicest people, inadvertently or on purpose, are they go to one person and say something. I just saw this and I'm a little concerned. I just thought you should know.
Right.
Things like that. Then they go to the other person. I was just a little concerned and I thought you should know.
No, because then, you're a leader around here too.
And they're passing things to both sides and
just
turning the fire up on both sides and
standing
back and watching the blaze. So if you're a person stirring up dissension, who wants to be around that? Who wants to be around people that are angry at each other? And we live in a world already filled with that.
Right.
So it's hard to be an influencer when you're running around creating anger and frustration.
We're going to wrap up today. I guess as I hear, these were a lot of difficult subjects. But as I think about it, what a wonderful challenge we have.
Yeah.
Because all these gaping problems need leaders to come up and don't take the bait.
Right.
Instead, love, even when it's difficult.
Right.
Figure out how to be part of a solution, not how to tear down.
Right. So stirring, what's the opposite of stirring up dissension? It's bringing healing.
Yes.
Bringing people together. Helping people see that they're not that far apart on an issue rather than, exacerbating the issue.
Anyway, until next time, we look forward to seeing you again.